beware and prepare for something spine tingling, something horrifying, pure terror to your eardrums. This is Epic Film Guy's B-Sides.
With the Dream Warriors, don't wanna dream no more. Welcome, ghouls, ghosts, Springwood slashers, and maybe any of you Springwood high school students out there listening to another edition of Epic Film Guy's B-Sides. That's right, we are back, and yes, again, I am the man behind the motherfucking mask here. I am Epic Film Guy Justin.
And I'm Epic Film Guy Brian.
And tonight, Brian, this is a really special episode. I think I preface most of our B-side episodes with that statement, but this is a really, really special one because we are celebrating the 30th anniversary of what many would consider one of the best 80s horror films of all time. A horror film that is part of one of the biggest horror franchises of all time. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be talking about tonight A Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors. Most fans out there, they have a really hard time telling you whether they think this one is their favorite Nightmare on Elm Street film or if the first one is their favorite. It's usually between the two. As a fan myself, I usually have an issue with that all the time. I really, some weeks it's Dream Warriors is my favorite, other weeks the original is my favorite. I don't know how you feel about that, Brian, but you know, I find myself going back and forth on it.
I also struggle with these feelings, Justin, because the original Nightmare on Elm Street is a paragon of the horror genre. It's masterful in its ability to frighten the hell out of you. But Dream Warriors takes a different approach. It's still very creepy, and it's a arguably very scary film, but it's more of a fantasy adventure type film, more of a fantasy thriller type. And I have to say that I prefer Dream Warriors a little bit over the original because, and I love going back to this, but when I first watched A Nightmare on Elm Street 3, it was a couple years ago, or actually a little over a year ago, I texted you and I said, that was a religious experience.
That's correct.
When I watched Dream Warriors for the first time, a religious experience. I used that phrase because, I don't know, everything about this movie works for me for whatever reason, and I'll go into those reasons later on.
Well, we have a lot on our plate here. That again, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about Dream Warriors, which is celebrating, this episode should be hitting on the day of its 30th anniversary. I can't believe it's been that long. I recall the first time I had seen the film. I was definitely at the end of middle school, early high school, if I recall. And it was when video stores were still a thing, something that we all look back on. We all remember. We miss it. It's nostalgic. Those Friday nights, you know, with your buddies, you're going in, you're going to grab a couple movies, you're going to watch, maybe smoke some weed, maybe steal some of your buddy's dad's beers from the fridge. Yeah, whatever. That's what we did. But I remember going in and we grabbed a couple Friday the 13th. And the first time I'd ever seen this movie was at my buddy's house. He grabbed Dream Warriors and luckily it was available. I remember watching it for the first time and just being wowed by it. I mean, everyone knew about Freddy. When I was growing up, way younger than that, Freddy was a thing. You just knew it. You saw him on t-shirts. You know, around Halloween time, you saw people dress up as Freddy. But Dream Warriors, unlike the first film, really opened my eyes to the horror genre in general, way beyond that. So this is a really special event here. We did actually want to just do a quick shout out here to my buddy Jeremy Moorhead. He's the biggest Freddy fan I've ever met. This dude, his car literally is red, okay? His license plate says Krueger, and the car is stock full of Freddy Krueger paraphernalia. But he was supposed to be on the show tonight to celebrate with us, but he could not make it due to a work schedule situation. So this one's for you, Jeremy. But hey, maybe on another one. For those of our fans out there, for those of our listeners out there tonight, Brian, that are unfamiliar, that's right, there may be some people out there that don't know about this movie, with Dream Warriors, why don't you tell them what Dream Warriors is all about?
Certainly. Well, Dream Warriors stars Patricia Arquette in her first film role as Kristen Parker, who is haunted by nightmares of the sadistic killer Freddy Krueger. And after a suicide attempt, she finds herself in a mental facility for troubled youth, where she finds that her fellow inmates are having similar dreams. And it turns out that only the return of Nancy Thompson, played once again by Heather Langenkamp, and their unique dream powers can help them stop Freddy from murdering them all one by one.
That's exactly what the film's all about. And, you know, this movie comes after what most people would consider, you know, one of the weakest entries in the franchise, and that's Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2.
Which I disagree with. I would rather watch Part 2 any day over Part 5 or Part 6, but that's just me.
I think a lot of people have started to come around to that. You know,
it's weird. It's definitely the black sheep of the series because it doesn't follow the rules of the original.
It doesn't at all. Yeah, there's a simple fact is that, you know, after the original, Craven had other ideas in his mind. He wanted to do other things. And Bob Shea at New Line was like, well, this is the first movie that's made New Line some money. We're going to keep making these. I think they realized what they had. So Freddy's Revenge, I actually like it. It is a decent part of the series, but by no means is it, you know, highly regarded within the fan community as one of the best of the franchise. So Dream Warriors comes in, it brings back Heather Langenkamp, it brings back Nancy from the original film. It does everything you would kind of hope that, you know, the film would do after the original.
Definitely. And it is really the real part two of the series.
Exactly. Like I said, I do like the second film. Definitely, it's enjoyable. You know, as homoerotic as it is, whether they actually decided to make it that way or not purposely, you know, they've gone back and forth on that. But Dream Warriors is a return to form, and it builds upon the Nightmare formula, and it kind of makes itself, basically gives itself a new identity, I think, Brian. It really expands.
Yeah, and it gives the series a whole mythology to it as well. Like, the original Nightmare on Elm Street is a brilliantly creative movie, but it's very contained. It's kind of small.
It's small. I was just going to say that. It's very small. It's very claustrophobic. It's contained to just a very small area. Yeah, definitely.
In Dream Warriors, you have all of these heroes with all these different powers, and you have all, it just expands the world of the series, and it really marked the start of a new sense of ingenuity and creativeness in this series and in horror in general, in my opinion.
And, you know, one thing I have to jump right on here, aside from, you know, how they expanded on the whole idea of dreamlike fantasies, which is, think about it. You have this character that comes into your dreams and just taunting you and trying to kill you. You know, I think that one of the best things that director Chuck Russell did when he came into this thing is he actually changed Wes Craven's script. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Wes Craven, you know, they brought him in to do a treatment for the third film. Some of his ideas actually did stick, but the majority of the tone and the feel of his script was changed once Chuck Russell came on the project. Basically, what Craven wanted to do when he came back in to do the script is he wanted to make something even nastier than the original, even darker, more gritty, way more just outlandishly negative, in a sense. And what Chuck thought when he came in was, let's really expand on the idea of this fantasy world, what we can do with it visually and really have some fun with it. So I think that is the key thing that makes, to begin, of all things that make Dream Warrior so special. But I think Chuck had a great mindset for what they could do with this kind of movie. But I think that the core of this movie, aside from its great direction and the fantasy elements, Brian, is its cast. And we have as the lead Patricia Arquette in her first movie, as you said, as Kristen Parker. Now, don't get me wrong. I love Heather Langenkamp and the first Nightmare on Elm Street. And most of these horror franchises do at least have a one or two films where they have a good central character, very well performed, very well acted. But here we have something very special because I have to tell you, I think Patricia Arquette knocked it out of the park in this one.
She knocked it out of the parker? I don't know.
Was that a pun, Brian?
I guess it was. I don't know. Oh, I don't know what God. That was. Anyway, hey, if you're going to sing, I'm going to make puns, okay?
I'm cool with that, bro. This is B-sides, bro. We can take a shit and we can record it and put it on here and people will listen to it.
Yes. Anyway, Patricia Arquette, as an actress, she's always had this like haunted quality to her where her voice is kind of, it's almost like she's in a dream already. She kind of has this voice that's just kind of, it's very soft and very, and you can tell that she's seen some shit in her life, you know?
Yeah,
and
definitely.
That makes it perfect for our new, you know, main character, Kristen. Heather Langenkamp as Nancy was a great hero in the first one. I don't think she's a particularly great actress. So I think she's used appropriately in this one as kind of the mentor for the kids, but she is very much a side character in this. And all of the other cast is great.
Exactly.
The inmates. I love, and I don't know how to pronounce his last name, but the actor who played Kincaid.
Ken Sagos.
Yes, he is so brilliant in this. I love his line, let's go kick that motherfucker's ass all over Dreamland. I love that
That's
line.
That's great.
And the delivery. He really was. I feel like he really was that character, because he said in the documentary Never Sleep Again about the Nightmare on Elm Street series, he said how he came into his audition and basically cussed the director out, and they hired him right there.
Right
on
the
spot.
Yep, that's correct.
So his character is in the film is very much a reflection of that, where he's very much against authority, very mouthy and sassy, but, you know, with a good heart.
I agree. And that's, again, what I was moving into right now was the cast. I think what makes this movie special, beyond any other slasher franchise, any other slasher film for that matter, there's always going to be like Halloween, you know, you name it, like these groups of kids, they're likable, you like them, you feel bad when they die, even though you like seeing them get killed. In this case, they really went out of their way to make really interesting, relatable, and different characters. You know, we've got a kid in a wheelchair. You know, we've got a kid that, you know, sexually frustrated. We've got, you know, all these different characters. We have got a girl that battled drugs, you know.
She's my favorite character for one reason, and that's because I'm in love with Jennifer Rubin, the actress. I'm in love with her. I want to marry her. And she said in the documentary how, you know, on set, everyone was in love with Patricia Arquette.
That's right. No one cared about her. Yeah.
No one cared about her. If I were on that set, I would talk to her. I would talk to Jennifer Rubin.
Oh, man.
I think
that,
she's beautiful.
With that mohawk, man, and those switchblades. Yeah, you better believe it.
Yeah, I love
I'm
it.
Bad. You know, but again, that's why this movie's so special, I think. Especially coming after the first and the second movie, and compared to the other types of horror films we were seeing at the time, all of these kids had a fantastic chemistry. They were in this group together. They were dealing with this force that is Robert Englund's Freddy Krueger, which we'll be getting to in a little bit here. But they band together, man. They care about each other. They're watching each other's asses, and they're making sure that, you know, they're watching each other. They're taking care of each other. They are a singular group, and they've come together to deal with this issue. And I think that's what makes it so special. Like I said, there's very rarely a time in these kinds of movies in this genre where you get that many actors together and they actually have that well of a chemistry.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like the film really empathizes with these characters too. They yearn for the adult figures in their lives to listen and understand. And I mean, if you have ever grown up, you can relate to that. And,
exactly.
Just like their fears and their desires. And like the film just, it really empathizes with these characters. And so does the audience in turn, because I really didn't want to see some of these characters die. And they die in the most awesome ways. And it's, you know, but it is genuinely heartbreaking, because you see that some, you know, these kids have futures and they're bright kids, and, you know, they're, you know, some of them are flawed, but, and that's what Freddy uses to ultimately kill them off. But you can tell that they have promise. And that's what makes this movie, to me, more effective than, you know, any one of the run of the mill, you know, Friday the 13th. Sequels where they're just, you know, you're just waiting for them to get killed off. And this one, it's different.
I totally agree with you. That's really is what makes this movie so special to me, is that number one, the cast is great. These kids are all very relatable. They're all very real. You can relate to them. You can feel that adolescent angst that they're dealing with. You know, they're going through difficult times in their life. They're stuck in this, basically, you know, this, I guess it's a hospital of sorts, and they're trying to figure out, you know, exactly what these kids' issues are. They're all having these dreams, and they have to come together. It's very much like a family, like a cohesive unit coming together to face this fear together. And that's really where, you know, you'd have to go in a real life situation. It's always better to band together as a group to handle something. But to move on from the cast, because they are all fantastic here, we're going to be dealing with right now the iconic Robert Englund, who I myself finally had a chance to meet
over, you were so lucky.
Over the summer. And one of the coolest things happened, and I've said this on the regular, our regular show, when I met him, waited in line. It was a hell of a situation to actually finally meet him. I waited for hours. And one of the coolest things was I was right about to get up to him and sit down to get my picture taken and, you know, be able to ask him a question and get his autograph. And a mentally retarded guy kind of, he came in and they asked me if I would mind if he could, you know, go in front of me real quick just to say hi to Robert. And I said, that's fine. That's totally cool. I could see how excited he was. And the whole room was quiet. And the dude just said, I love when you say prime time, bitch. And literally, dude, the whole room just went absolutely fucking bonkers over that. And then Robert stood up, went up and put his arm around him and said, welcome to prime time, bitch. And he did it in the Freddy voice. And we all went fucking through our gourd, man. Literally just clapping, you know, cheering. And I was right there in front of him when he did it, like less than like 3 feet away. It was literally the coolest shit ever of all time.
But that's awesome.
This guy, he literally has made his career off this character, and not in a bad way by any means. He doesn't exploit it. He loves this character. And, you know, I think the one thing that stays true throughout all these movies is Englund as Freddy Krueger. This movie, it takes a different route slightly with the character. This is the first time we hear Freddy doing awesome one-liners. We have the welcome to primetime, bitch. We have a bunch of other things that he throws at the screen that, you know, make the crowd laugh and they get enjoyment out of it. This really is, Brian, the beginning of what we would call MTV Freddy.
Well, it wasn't, yeah, you're right about that, where he kind of became a little bit more into the mainstream, but it wasn't, to me in this film, Freddy is still scary.
Exactly.
In the later sequels, he became kind of like a cartoon character. I know that's kind of cliche to say, but they literally have him doing, you know, Bugs Bunny, Wile E. Coyote stuff in, you know, the later sequels, but with Dream Warriors, he still has that, you know, that sense of just pure menace. There are some scenes involving Freddy in this movie that will haunt me for the rest of my life, especially the imagery in which I guess one character creates like little marionettes, little puppets.
Right.
And the stop motion effects of the puppet coming to life, and it's a Freddy puppet, and Freddy then cuts the veins of the character, or he cuts the arm open of the character and uses his veins as like a marionette, like a puppet, and
his strings. So, yeah,
it's so terrifying and so brutal, and it's so like, but with a wicked sense of humor. And that's Freddy in a nutshell. That's, you know, he will cut open your skin and laugh while he's doing it and make a joke about it. So that's where the performance of Robert Englund is really, really so masterful, in that he can perfectly balance those two conflicting kind of emotions of humor and terror. And I don't think there'll be anything like it as far as we can see in horror, because they tried in the remake to have Jackie Earle Haley spout these one-liners, and it just did not work.
It didn't work at all. It didn't fit his version of the character. You know, that's the perfect thing in this movie, is that they found that balance. It could have gone either way, but Englund has a lot of fun in this movie playing with the material. And a lot of those one-liners he just came up with right off the top of his head while they were shooting. You know, they were just ad-libbed to the production. You're totally correct there. This is the perfect balance, because, you know, after this, we have the dream master, we have the dream child. You know, we see him so much in the public eye after this movie. He's all over the place. It's kind of hard to be scared of him anymore. But in this movie, it does strike the perfect balance of, he's still in the shadows. He still has the power over you. He's very frightening. The makeup job in Dream Warriors is one of my absolute favorites that was ever done in any of the films. And he's still got a strong sense of menace to him in this thing. So out of all the films, I feel like this is the perfect balance of all the attributes that make Freddy who he is. And they got it perfectly in this thing.
Absolutely. And not only that, but we also get in this film a sense of Freddy's backstory.
Which That's correct.
Hadn't really gotten before, which was, you know, the bastard son of a, what is it?
100 maniacs.
100 maniacs. Oh, that's so great. You know, so you get a little bit of his backstory, where he came from, why he's so evil, or why he's so evil. And, you know, the mysterious nun who turns out to be, you know, Freddy's mom, or the spirit of Freddy's mom. So you get all sorts of religious kind of connotations, like a subtext to it, that is also really intriguing.
That's correct. Yeah, it takes a little bit of a time away from just the normal slasher type tropes, and it really does delve into a little bit deeper of who that character is, where he came from, and it's interesting. It's not like where, you know, modern remakes, modern horror films, where they really want you to know so much about the killer, so much about the evil, that it makes it not scary anymore. This did it in a safe way, where, and they do delve into it a little bit further, you know, within the other couple films after this, back and forth, you know, about who Freddy is, where he came from. But this film does it very, very well. You're still very scared by Freddy. It doesn't tell you too much about the monster to make him unscary. Another great thing about this movie, Brian, is its fucking climax. I mean, seriously, the ending of this movie just goes balls to the wall with all these kids banding together to take on Freddy, to try to end this thing. You know, we've got Heather Langenkamp's Nancy in there. They're all going through their problems, and they're dealing with Freddy one-on-one and dealing with their nightmares with him. And at the end, they just all try to come together, whoever's left, to try to take him on. And they have this plan.
All the while that's happening, you have John Saxon as Sheriff Thompson fighting Freddy's skeleton, which is awesome. And then like a nice little Ray Harryhausen tribute.
Yeah, dude, definitely.
Just awesome.
Yeah, man.
The whole way the film builds up to that third act is great, and then kind of all hell breaks loose, literally. And yeah, it's a firecracker of a climax.
I got to tell you, out of any of the movies of this franchise that you want to put in, it's late at night, you're sitting around, you're like, you know what, I want to put on a nightmare movie. This usually is the one I gravitate towards. I'm not going to lie. I don't know many people that would totally disagree with that. We'd like to hear from the fans. If you're listening to this episode, make sure to comment on the Facebook page. Let us know what you think, because I feel like out of all the films in this franchise, this is just the go-to, no matter what, man.
I absolutely 100% agree. I mean, like I said, I've only seen this movie for the first time very recently, but since then I've probably rewatched it around four times or so. So yeah, I totally know what you mean. Whenever I'm in the mood for, you know, a Nightmare on Elm Street, it's either the original or this. And like I said, I think I prefer this to the original. It's just personal preference, but they're both masterpieces, but I think I gravitate more towards this one as well.
Before we wrap up, Brian, before we get to our ratings of the movie, that's right, Brian, you have to do a rating of Dream Warriors. You know how we do on the motherfucking B-sides episodes. We have to talk about the Freddy snake creature. We have to talk about the big giant Freddy slug. Very, very much like a phallic looking giant Freddy peepee that's trying to suck down Patricia Arquette down his throat. How awesome is that, dude?
It's Seriously. Great. And you don't see that, you know, if this movie were remade today, God forbid, but if this movie were remade today, that would be a CGI piece of crap looking, you know, monstrosity. You had actual puppeteers, you had, and there was a little bit of real danger involved, because
there was,
that's a huge puppet. And there's a lot of practicality that goes with it, and it's, you know, stuff could go wrong. So, you know, it's a hell of an image for sure.
It's just, I love the idea that they made this thing basically to look like a giant Freddy like a giant Freddy dong, a huge dick with Freddy's head. And the animatronics and the one version they had, and then, you know, the puppet, and it's so beautiful. Like, everything about this movie is perfect to me. It's why it's so special to me. And that's why we did this episode, ladies and gentlemen, to celebrate this movie for its 30th anniversary. I know nothing was really actually planned in general, like as far as the mainstream. I've seen a couple screenings of 35mm prints out there happening, which I would have loved to attended. But nothing that big outside of, you know, I think NECA's doing an 18-inch Freddy Krueger action figure of the Dream Warriors version, the one that I own, the small version. But nothing else is happening. There's not like a big push for anything. But, you know, it would be great to see that, because this is really, you know, one of the most special horror films of the 80s, like I said in the beginning of this episode, and one of the most special films of this franchise among any other franchise. It's very rare that you get this many things right in this kind of movie, where you get a great cast, you get a great script, you get all these perfect elements that come together, and the movie makes money. And this was a huge hit for New Line. This movie just basically proved that Freddy Krueger was the house that New Line built, just like they coined that term. He truly was. It made a ton of money. And hey, director Chuck Russell went on to make big movies like The Mask, Eraser with Arnold Schwarzenegger. Hey, he even made The Scorpion King, Brian. That's right. With The Rock, baby. I know how much you like that movie. I know you got to love that. But, you know, the stars were in alignment. Everything was perfect. And this movie is one of the best Nightmare on Elm Street films of all time. So right now we're going to get to ratings. I'm going to throw it to you first, Brian, for your rating of A Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors.
Absolutely. When I first saw the film, I wrote a review of it, and I'm going to paraphrase it now. It's hard to pinpoint why this movie is so special to me. Perhaps it's the fact that despite the dark tone, grotesque kills, and icky imagery, there is a glimmer of hope that our heroes take solace in. Perhaps it's the superb special effects, or the fact that I'm in love with Jennifer Rubin. Or perhaps, most likely, it's a perfect blending of all of these elements. I love this movie. It's a rickety dark ride that plunges us into bouts of terror. It's an escape into high fantasy that lifts our spirits. And it's one of the rare sequels that, in my opinion, surpasses the original. I'm going to give A Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors, a 9 out of 10.
Holy shit. You know what, man? This happens to us all the time. This happens to me with Nick, and it happens with me and you all the time on this damn show. Why do I have to agree with everyone so much? If there was ever a horror film that I would give a 10 out of 10 to, Dream Warriors would be it. But it's not quite there. It's close, man. If we were doing 0.5s, it'd be like pushing it.
Agree.
But,
yeah.
You know, I'm also giving it a 9 out of 10. It is one of my favorite movies of all time. If you go into my top 20, which I've never written down, I've never wrote anything to put it on paper, this movie would most likely make its way in there. It's definitely one of my favorite horror movies. And like I've said, I go back and forth all the time, man. I really can't make a designated decision as to if this is my favorite or the original is my favorite.
It's tough, yeah.
It's really a difficult decision. I just know that this, along with the original and Wes Craven's New Nightmare, are all in my top three. So 9 out of 10 for me. And hey, we had to celebrate this movie. It's a very special movie, not just for the horror genre, not just for movies, but for 80s movies as well. This movie is a huge cultural icon, and I wish we could do more. I wish we could have brought Robert Englund on. We could have brought on, you know, the cast. We could have brought on Chuck Russell. Could have brought on fucking Bob Shea. Man,
Jennifer Rubin.
What would I do to have Bob Shea on here? Like, I just would love to hear the locker room stories about this movie with him.
Oh man.
But you know, we got to give it to Bob Shea. This franchise would never have been what it was without Bob Shea putting as much passion and as much effort into this thing as he did, along with New Line when they were first in their early stages. So thank you, early New Line. Thank you, horror fans. And thanks to all you guys out there listening to the show. We have a couple more B-Sides episodes coming your way. And I promise this time, no bullshit. I'm not going to bullshit you. But seriously, in March, we got a couple episodes, some surprise episodes coming your way, and I think you'll be pleasantly surprised with what those are going to be about. But until then, I am Epic Film Guy Justin.
And I'm Epic Film Guy Brian.
And we will see you at the movies.